Welcome to Earth Matters here on Gila Members Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM. This is Allison Civic, Executive Director of Gila Resources Information Project, and I'm your host for today's program. More than 170 world leaders gathered at the United Nations this past Friday to sign the Paris Agreement, a sweeping international agreement aimed at curbing greenhouse gas emissions that cause climate change. While signatory countries will now hash out national emission reduction targets, the clock continues to tick and temperatures continue to rise. The Earth's global temperatures in March of this year were the most abnormally warm on record for any month, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. March of this year was also the 11th consecutive month in a row that the Earth has recorded its warmest respective month on record. So what can we be doing at the local level to help achieve carbon reductions to protect the climate and also create more resilient communities in the face of climate variability? Silver City has been a leader in New Mexico in implementing community solar projects such as the solar field at the wastewater treatment plant and improving energy efficiency of local government buildings and homes. More recently, Silver City is implementing green infrastructure and rainwater harvesting projects throughout the town. And here with me today in the Gila Members Community Radio Studio to talk about using permaculture principles to achieve a sustainable community and about some of the green infrastructure and rainwater harvesting projects going on around town are Asher Gilbert and Mike Gallio of Stream Dynamics. Welcome, Asher and Mike.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, I'm really pleased to have you both on the show today because, Asher and Mike, you both are practitioners of sustainable living, and so many of us get overwhelmed thinking about the magnitude of the climate crisis and what we as individuals or families or communities should be doing to respond. So start off by telling us about your philosophies about facilitating a transformation to a more sustainable society. Asher, would you like to begin?
Sure. So my perspective on this has to do with my living situation. I moved out to Mimbres about 11 years ago from Tucson, where I lived a pretty conventional existence. And I moved to an off-grid solar-powered house and instantly had to deal with limited amounts of electricity and water and all those things. So the things that we generally take for granted, plug in unlimited power and water, were not that way for me. At the same time, it was one of these kind of idealistic sort of ideas that you move into an off-grid solar-powered house and instantly you're living a sustainable lifestyle, which was not true at all either. So my perspective comes from learning how to live with limited amounts of resources, but to live comfortably and happily and enjoyably. And my philosophy on this is that in order for our culture to reach a point that is truly sustainable with the Earth, we need to drastically learn how to live with much fewer resources. And I've learned how to do this in very comfortable and fun and interesting ways. And we'll hopefully get to share some of those with you today.
All right. So Mike Gallio, what are your philosophies towards transforming our society to a more sustainable society?
I live in El Paso. And like Asher's existence in Tucson, a pretty conventional lifestyle. I live in the city and I drive a big truck and those kinds of things. But my background in education is in biology, and some of my professors back in university were big time into conservation. And so I like to look at things on the context of conservation on a landscape scale and try to do things that I can in my daily life, in my conventional lifestyle, that conserve water. And so for me, a big part of that is actually educating other people how to help, because I know that I don't have this idealistic lifestyle on the off-the-grid solar house. But from the principal's perspective, I like the idea of taking a look at the things that we do every day and seeing how we can tweak them just a little bit to reduce our consumption, whether it's through water or land or food or whatever, trying to just reduce our consumeristic consumption.
So kind of that first R of the three R's, reduce, reuse, recycle, where you're starting out. Reduce is really the number one most important thing.
That's right. If you can reduce, then you don't have to reuse and recycle.
Exactly. Okay.
There's actually two more R's.
Oh, two more R's. I got us off track.
Refuse.
Refuse.
Would you like that plastic bag? No, thank you. I brought my own cloth bag. So refuse, and the other one is repair.
Repair.
Like the bike works.
Yes.
Go and repair our bicycles instead of just throwing them away and buying a new one.
All right. So we have to change that to the five R's. All right. Let's get some definitions down for our conversation today. Because I know the idea of sustainability and sustainable living, a lot of people have different perspectives on that. So explain what you mean, Osher and Mike, about sustainability and sustainable living. And how do you use permaculture principles to achieve a more sustainable society?
Yeah, so many of you out there may not really know what permaculture means. I often question myself what it really means. And the term permaculture came about in the early 70s before this word sustainability was actually being thrown around and used. And the idea of permaculture was kind of a conjunction of the words permanent and agriculture. And that doesn't really speak much to me personally. But what permaculture encompasses is something that goes beyond what we talk about as sustainability today. Sustainability now has become this mainstream word and concept, and of course, giant corporations have tapped in on that and greenwashed a lot of what we hear as sustainability. So permaculture is basically it's a set of design principles or a design method that are based on a set of ethics and principles that encompass a holistic thinking approach towards how we live, how we interact with our homes, our yards and land and animals and community. So it's a holistic approach, and we'll get into some more specifics of that as we carry on here.
So maybe you could give us some examples, maybe just some general examples, and we are gonna talk about specifics, but just generally to give our listeners a sense of what you mean by these principles of permaculture and this holistic approach.
Okay. So we're also going to be talking about green infrastructure and rainwater harvesting, and these serve as really great example of how we can apply concepts or principles of permaculture, this set of design principles. And one of the main tenets of permaculture is this holistic approach. So when we think about the way stormwater happens, especially in cities, and the way it's dealt with, we have a very single approach to get water as fast as we can out of the city and into the creek. And of course, we have a great example of that in Silver City with the big ditch and all of the flooding that happens downtown, and as you know. So permaculture will take this stormwater problem and say, the problem should be the solution. And so we take this problem of stormwater and now try to integrate it in a holistic way back onto our landscapes. And so we realize, you know, we're pumping this water from purifying water at the water treatment plant, pumping it to our houses, putting it through our faucets, putting it down the drain, sending it back into the creek, pumping it back out. And a lot of that water we're using to water our plants and water our gardens. Why not just take the water directly falling from the sky and utilizing that? So we do rainwater harvesting in earthworks and basins, and those in the landscape. So you can think of conventional landscaping, you're creating berms and putting plants on top of the berms, and the water falls and just runs off away from the plants. In rainwater harvesting, we're inverting that concept. We're creating basins and maybe taking that dirt that we take out of the basin, putting it along a contour on the downhill slope, so we're catching and holding that water, infiltrating it into the ground. So now we talk about stacking functions, which is another tenet of permaculture, where now we've taken some of this stormwater and held it on our property, and there's a whole bunch of other things that begin to come into play and happen when we do that. So we've got, now we've got a wet environment. We put organic mulch down on there, wood chips and things that are now making the soil alive as we bring in microorganisms and create a whole ecosystem. We supply water to plants that get passively watered. We don't have to go and turn on any spigot or have any system that's going to automatically water those plants. And then we're creating habitat for wildlife, and we're creating food for people, and we're creating shade, and we're creating beauty, and all these things that are now working together to serve not only us as humans, but also the earth, our community, our plant people friends. And we've taken an approach of just getting the water out and turning it into a solution that recreates the way that we interact with the world in a beautiful way that is a holistic approach.
And Mike, building upon what Asher just described, permaculture principles, since they're working with natural systems, help to bring resiliency to our communities, our natural systems. And this is an important concept, right, as we think about adapting to climate change.
That's right, yes. On a front yard scale, we can turn our landscape from a gravel mulched heat sink, heat reflecting area, into a rainwater harvesting basin with native trees and shrubs and grasses and vegetation that actually soaks that water in and then releases that moisture back through evapotranspiration off the trees and the plant. And so you get this cooling effect, and you're also reducing the stormwater load going into the roads. So you're reducing flooding downstream, and all of that compounding on one another as you stack these features going into each other, that builds resiliency in the city. Just living active soil by itself is resilient in its way. And if you can expand that, you see that resiliency
so
multiply.
Yeah, you both are working for Stream Dynamics in building a lot of these green infrastructure and rainwater harvesting projects around Silver City and the county. Tell us about Stream Dynamics. What does Stream Dynamics do?
Stream Dynamics does a number of amazing projects. Van Clothier is the founder, and he has an amazing background in watershed restoration, riparian restoration work as a mentor with Bill Zedai, co-author of a book called Let the Water Do the Work. So Van and Stream Dynamics does a number of riparian restoration programs in downcut and eroded watersheds on ranches and canyon lands. And we also do a number of urban watershed restoration programs. We'll do work restoring the Big Ditch Creek riparian area. We'll talk a bit about that. And we also like to look at the streets in our towns as part of the watershed. And we use a lot of the same principles as in riparian, but on different scales to slow down, spread, infiltrate stormwater and rainwater into our landscapes.
All right, so we'll be right back here on Earth Matters after this short break, and we'll pick up where we left off and talk more specifically about these projects with Asher Gelbart and Mike Gallio of Stream Dynamics. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. This is Allison Civic, Director of Gila Resources Information Project, and I'm your host for today's program. My guests today are Asher Gelbart and Mike Gallio of Stream Dynamics, and we're talking about creating sustainability and resiliency in our communities through green infrastructure and rainwater harvesting. Asher and Mike, you've been involved in implementing green infrastructure projects here in Silver City to address stormwater management. You touched a little bit on that in the first segment, but what is green infrastructure and what's the concept behind it?
So green infrastructure, the term came about in contradiction to what we've seen over the last 100 years that we like to call gray infrastructure. And that's all the cement and asphalt that's channeling water out of our towns and cities and into the waterways in a direct shot. It's like, get the water out as fast as you can through concrete and pipes. Green infrastructure flips that on its head and says, how can we actually infiltrate this water into the ground and create beautiful green landscapes incorporating plants and organic and living systems and actually utilize that water in replacement of the water flowing out. At the same time, green infrastructure is purifying the water that does flow out and making water that ends up in our streams and rivers much cleaner, less sediment load, and especially less E. coli load, the old E. coli coming from dog poop primarily that flows down the road in the street. And thirdly, less oils and petrochemicals that plants are able to mitigate, but if they wind up directly in the rivers and streams, they're very damaging to water quality.
So tell us about the projects you've been working on, because I know people have seen them around town. Give us a status on what you all have been doing.
So Stream Dynamics has been doing a number of curb cut projects for quite a few years now, kind of pioneering in Silver City what was started in Tucson, where we make a cut in the curb and allow that water to flow right into the landscape. And Stream Dynamics got a grant that started up within the last year through the New Mexico Environment Department to do 80 such of these curb cuts on city street right-of-ways. So the right-of-way is that section of land between the road and your fence line or the sidewalk. It often has utilities and things running through it. The city has an easement on that property, but the homeowner is also responsible for upkeep of that property. And what we've been doing is going through town and selecting sites that are appropriate to do these curb cuts and bring water into the landscape. And we dig a number of basins along the city right-of-way and then integrate them with native plants and nice aesthetic and functional landscaping with rock and mulch and the native plants in particular.
Yeah, so really these projects are, you mentioned it earlier, they're serving a water quality benefit, they're saving water, right? Because you're taking that water from the street and putting it to use, so it's not just flowing down into the sewer and then into the big ditch. You're actually directing that water into your landscape and that water soaking into the ground. Let's tie it back to climate change. Like, how do these types of projects reduce our carbon emissions?
So like Asher mentioned, we've got an existing network of gray infrastructure, and that is ideally designed to reduce nuisance problems, let's say nuisance flooding. In reality, though, in some cases, it works the other way. And so what we're doing is we're taking a resource that's there that's considered a nuisance, and we're putting that to a beneficial use. And so it's free. It requires virtually no more maintenance than the current situation. You can shift your maintenance from deploying a big giant vacuum truck to suck water out of a flooded street. You can shift that maintenance responsibility to a trained crew of landscape guys that know how to manage these curb cuts and earthworks that are landscaped with native plants. Train them how to do that, and you're creating beauty from what was at one time considered a nuisance resource.
And you're not using all the big trucks, street sweepers, getting rid of the sediment that's accumulated in the streets. And so that's one way. And you're not, and if you're using this water, you're not pumping the water, right? Which requires energy, right? Additional water, pumping it from the ground. And Asher, right, you already explained, you don't have to use treated water out of your faucet to water, right?
Right. I mean, so municipalities go through great expense and effort to make our drinking water that comes out of all of the faucets in our houses drinking water, and it, to make it meet EPA drinking water standards. That's a lot of effort, and we don't need to put that in our landscapes. We can use this water off the streets, and in turn, actually, like Asher mentioned, you can filter the hydrochemicals and things like that that are coming off of the streets. The plants that are in those landscapes will filter that out and, again, do it for free.
Yeah, right.
You don't think when you turn on water that you're also turning on electricity, but water use has an electricity cost, and a pretty large one at that. And so in addition to saving electricity costs and the fossil fuels that go to do all the things that we do with water, we're also minimizing some of the impacts on the infrastructure of the road, because water flowing down streets moves the street along. It starts taking particles of asphalt, and they end up as sediment load in the river or in the creek. Our systems with these curb cuts are actually designed to flush and catch these sediment loads that then, instead of the sweet sweepers coming out after every big storm and wiping off the street using their gasoline and diesel fuel, someone can come with a shovel and simply dig out this little bit of sediment that catches in the sediment trap that we intentionally build into our systems.
And just toss it in the yard.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And we're, in creating these systems, you know, I like to look at things in terms of degenerative, generative, and regenerative systems. So degenerative systems immediately start to fall apart as soon as you build them, buy them, or construct them, and they consume way more resources than they consume. So our roads are a good example of that. Our cars are a great example of that. Then we get into generative systems. These also start to fall apart as soon as you implement them. However, they can produce more resources than they consume. Photovoltaic solar panels are a good example of that. They produce way more power over their lifetime than they consume in their manufacture. Regenerative systems, we don't get to see very much unless we look at nature. And in nature, we see a lot of regenerative systems. And the unique quality of regenerative systems is not only do they produce more resources than they consume, but they actually improve over time with minimal human impact. And rainwater harvesting systems are one of the most amazing examples of things that you and I can implement that get us really close to a regenerative system, where you, all you're doing is bringing the water in and bringing some organic mulch in, and nature takes over, and you get abundant plants that are going to thrive, take care of themselves, produce shade and beauty and wildlife, and clean the oils coming off the street, soak up all that nutrients from the dog poop as fertilizer, and do all these stacking functions things and improve in quality, beauty, and production over time.
How many projects have you implemented to date? I know this is a multi-year grant, so how far along are you?
Out of the 80 projects, I believe the count is 28 that
okay.
we've at least started.
Right.
Or and then, so and most of them have been completed, but a couple are in progress right now.
Can people still sign up for them, or do you pretty much have all 80 projects?
No, we have a lot of openings.
Great. So people could call Stream Dynamics and still sign up if they'd like to implement this rainwater harvesting project in their yard.
One thing to look at is look at the street flowing in front of your house. If your landscape is level or even slightly below, but not way up above the street level, we can bring water into that city right of way. And we're also looking in particular for people who have already done a whole lot of rainwater harvesting earthworks type of work, or have potential for that on their land or on their property, that can not only have the water flow into their little city right-of-way, but actually flow, say, into their backyard. And we have to look at that carefully to make sure there's a safe overflow route for that water. But we got a lot of water pouring down our streets and into the creek, and the more that we can pull this into the landscape, infiltrate it into the ground, we ameliorate these flooding problems and benefit the upstream, benefit the watershed everywhere.
And you got, how many employees, how big's your crew for a typical project?
So that's an interesting question. We currently have two full-time employees of Stream Dynamics. That would be Van Clothier and Claire Catlett. I am a part-time employee, And Theo, I don't know his last name, is a part-time employee. And we are also currently in charge of some YCC crews. So I'm in charge of the Aldo Leopold High School's rainwater harvesting crew. And we do projects every Friday, primarily on the university campus, but also some of these other on-town public land projects. And we are also currently in charge of a Wellness Coalition YCC crew of 18 to 25-year-olds that we have to help with labor on these projects over the next 20 weeks. We currently have a crew of four, but after school lets out and some of the 18-year-olds come on who are currently in school or in college, once they get out, they're going to join the crew and it's going to bump up the numbers to around 15 on that Wellness Coalition YCC crew.
Great. Well, what a super opportunity for kids to learn a skill that is a growth industry, right?
Actually,
Usher?
It's a spectacular. Growth market, yeah.
To teach these young people about, you know, principles of permaculture, caring for the earth, caring for people, caring for the future. Those are the ethics of permaculture, by the way. And also getting to teach them about regenerative systems. Like, what an amazing thing for young people to get to learn about at this time in their life and this time in the way that our world is going.
All right, we'll take a short break and talk more about green infrastructure and rainwater harvesting here on Earth Matters on KURU 89.1 FM. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Earth Matters. This is Allison Civic, Director of Gila Resources Information Project, and I'm your host for today's program. We're talking about green infrastructure and rainwater harvesting with Osher Gelbart and Mike Galeo from Stream Dynamics. Right now, you both are working on the new orchard next to the Office of Sustainability here in town. And perhaps some of our listeners were able to get over to the site on Earth Day this past Saturday to plant a tree. So tell us what's going on there at this site.
So this is a really spectacular opportunity that we've had with the help of many different organizations, of which I can't even name all of them, but there's a number of community orchards that have been planted, San Lorenzo Elementary School, a number of other elementary schools and other places, and that's through an organization with Kendra Milligan called
the Southwest Center for Health Innovation, and maybe the Grant County Community Health Council.
Okay. And this particular project is also supported by the Office of Sustainability, the site being right behind that, which is a part of the town of Silver City. And then we've had my Aldo Leopold YCC crew contribute to the design and some of the implementation. And then we also have Stream Dynamics. And the crew, Theo and I, are supervising the Wellness Coalition YCC crew. And there are actually some other contributors. This is a community orchard. So that means when there's fruit, this is for the whole community to come out and partake of. So let's start talking a bit about that, about how this project got designed and then implemented. So I've been teaching my high school kids the principles of rainwater harvesting, and we've been doing some other projects at the university, and I had the opportunity to bring them out to this brand new site, which if you guys have seen the site, it's just this big patch of dirt in between a whole city lot of parking lot and roof buildings, basically. So there's this one patch of landscape in this whole thing. It's across
right
from Goff Park and
right
next to the bank drive-thru,
right,
which
Washington
is a huge,
Federal drive-thru.
Huge parking lot. So I got to bring my kids out and do a site assessment. And part of our work is to figure out what's the watershed here, read the landscape, where's the water coming from, where's it going. And so we're going to rattle off some of the rainwater harvesting principles these guys had in mind while we did the design. So the first one is long and thoughtful observation. That's just like, what's going on here? Who's seen what's happened here? And we're looking at where the water is flowing. So we actually got rained on while we were out looking at that, got to see the water
that
flowing
always helps.
Through the parking lots, into the street. There's this giant culvert that all the water flows into on the other side of 11th Street. Our second principle is start at the top of the watershed. So the top of the watershed's actually up in the mountains, but then you got all these subwatersheds, so you find the top of the subwatershed. But then usually the watershed of influence, which is the site that you're working at, oftentimes in town, the top of that watershed is
the roof.
The roof.
And that's actually the case at most people's houses. And this is what's another really nice, spectacular component about the orchard is homeowners can actually see demonstrated how this kinds of principles and this kinds of infrastructure can work at their own house. And it, so it's really simple. So, yeah, we started.
So it's a good demonstration.
It's a great demonstration site.
Yeah. So started the top of the watershed, the roof. We got the Office of Sustainability roof, and we saw all this water pouring off the roof and not quite making it to the orchard. So we have some ways of cutting some blocks and creating some dips and creating some bumps, some speed bumps to get that water channeled in. Our third principle is to start small and simple. And I can't say that we actually did that one on this project because it's a pretty big project. But we have started small and simple in that we've practiced these curb cuts on a bunch of other places and these techniques, and we're practiced at that. The fourth principle we call the three S's: slow, spread, and sink. So we're slowing, spreading, and infiltrating the water. Slow, spread, and sink. And in this case, we figured out that in a big storm, if we channel all the water from these surrounding parking lots and roofs, we have about 40,000 gallons that will flow off the surrounding landscape that would otherwise run off the hardscapes and the landscapes.
They'd go down the street.
40,000 gallons just down the street. And directly into the Big Ditch Creek. So we figured out that there was enough landscape there to actually capture 100% of that water by taking a third of the landscape and digging in about a foot and a half deep depth of ponding capacity. So slow spread and sink, when you may go look at it and it looks like some shallow ponds. Well, in rainwater harvesting, we actually don't want the water to sit there in a pond. We want it to infiltrate into the ground. And we don't want to breed mosquitoes, which take about 72 hours for the eggs to hatch. So all of our systems, the water infiltrates into the ground, usually within 24 hours. And then it's there in the ground to be taken up by plants. Some of it gets stored for a while on the ground, but it's also moving through the ground on its way to the creek, but now in the ground and not on the street. So that brings us to our fifth principle.
Overflow. Plan the overflow route. And that's probably, in my mind, that's one of the most important ones, because I think that when people in general think of stormwater, they think of the destructive forces of stormwater. That's what really comes into their mind. And so when you say rainwater harvesting, for some folks, it conjures up
damage.
Mm-hmm. And a properly designed system has a safe overflow route. And so by planning your overflow, it actually kind of goes back to slow, spread, and sink. Every time you slow that water down, and if it overflows, you try to use that overflow as a resource in the next basin or under the next berm to water something else. And finally, it gets to a point where if there was enough water to come and in a short enough period of time that everything is still going to overflow, you need to safely discharge that overflow. And you don't want it to come gushing out of a culvert or running over the curb and causing some erosion somewhere else. So we'll find a way to safely discharge that overflow slowly and probably back into the street at this point, which will then find its way to a gutter. But by that point, we've already captured some tens of thousands of gallons of water.
So in this case, at the Office of Sustainability Orchard, we're shooting to capture 100% of that storm water flow. That's a 2-inch storm, all falling in an hour. We got somewhere between 20 and 40,000 gallons of capacity. If you look at the way the design is, there's the basins are laid out as a cascading set of ponding basin pools, and the final outlet is at the street on 11th Street where there's a curb cut. We also have three other curb cuts that are inlets letting water in from the curb in that bank drive-through. It also turns out that the cut at 11th Street also serves as an inlet for water flowing in that street. So it's only when everything, all the basins are full, that water then flows out as a safe overflow route. And we keep this in mind, especially on all the urban watershed projects when we're doing stuff on the city right-of-way, so that we don't run into flooding your house or things like that. The other thing that really distinguishes the rainwater harvesting community from conventional landscaping is that we very carefully measure these critical elevations to know that the water is going to overflow where we want it to and not just wherever it decides to. We use laser levels and low-tech versions of laser level called a bunyip or a reservoir water level to very carefully make these measurements and know where the water is going to flow.
Yeah. We do that specifically so we know exactly where the water is going.
So that was five. What's six?
So six is...
ground cover.
Yes. Maximize living and organic ground covers. So we don't want to see any bare dirt if possible. We want living and organic ground covers. Living ground covers are native plants, grasses that cover the ground, sink their roots in, keep the ground cool, prevent erosion, prevent opportunities for drawing nutrients up out of the soil, providing them to other plants, also opportunities as mulch. They can be cut back in the late fall and spread back on the ground as mulch. So those are the living plants. At the orchard, we planted a number of native plants. We planted Monarda and Yarrow, Columbine, and Apache Redgrass. These are all going to serve as living mulches. They're going to act like kind of like a carpet of vegetation surrounding all these trees. Are going to help keep the tree roots temperature regulated, shade the base of the tree, also provide medicinal and food opportunities. And then again, we always want more organic matter, more mulch, and these are all also mulch producers. So when they go dormant, we can cut off the green or cut off the stuff going brown, put it back on the ground, and create even more mulch. And then in the basins, we're planning to put 4 inches deep of organic mulch wood chips. And these have multiple purposes. So just to contrast with conventional landscaping, that you generally put down a big layer of plastic, and it creates this barrier between all the soil microbes and everything. It's supposed to prevent weeds.
It kills the soil, though.
But it basically kills the soil. With living and organic mulch, we are creating living soil. And in this site, there's a dirt lot before we started. And that was largely because the town was spraying it to keep the weeds down. So we've got somewhat toxic soil that we're trying to bring back and bring back to life. And so we're going to put 4 inches deep of mulch, if we can get enough of it, into the basin bottoms. That's going to actually inhibit weeds from popping up when it gets wet, but it's going to produce amazing alive soil because all that mulch attracts earthworms and all these
wonderful beneficial critters. And as the wood chips decompose into the soil, they add that organic matter and they bring life back into that soil. And when you'll be able to stick your fingers in there and it'll feel good instead of the current situation, which is just hard pan, dried out soil.
And will vegetation grow in these basins at some point?
Yes, we're going to intentionally plant a number of grasses. We've got already in there big saccaton, and another community contributor to this project was Richard Felger, who's been planting these grasses, the Apache red grass, also known as panic grass, and the big saccaton, which both produce seed that are edible and tasty. And as our community learns and we have more and more of these seed sources available from these grasses, they can become a food source. So that's a bit of resiliency
there,
too.
And what's the last principle, and how does it relate
to
the orchard?
So we've got two final principles, which are...
number seven is stacking functions. We've been talking a lot about stacking functions and making things... do things together. Mm-hmm. And then the eighth one is continuously assess and adapt.
Okay.
Look for things. It's a feedback loop. So
right.
When things go wrong, watch it, fix it. If you've kept it small and simple, it's easy to fix. And everything is always adapting to what's happening.
So eight principles of permaculture that are in play at the orchard behind the Office of Sustainability. So let's take a short break and talk more about green infrastructure and rainwater harvesting here on Earth Matters on KURU 89.1 FM. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. This is Allison Civic, and I'm your host for today's program. If you're just joining us, we've been talking about green infrastructure and rainwater harvesting with Asher Gelbart and Mike Gallio of Stream Dynamics. And In the break, Osher and Mike were telling me there really are 9 principles of permaculture, and the 9th one is...
Have fun.
All right.
Because this is all really fun stuff. That's the most amazing thing about it. When you're getting out there working with the community, and you've got these kids understanding how soil microbiology works and planting plants and trees, it's all really, really fun. And then when you see a rainstorm come through and fill up your basins, and you realize that all of this water that was previously being unused is now going to nourish plants that will give habitat for wildlife and food for human consumption, it's just really, really exciting, very rewarding, and fun. So, indeed,
excellent.
Have fun.
And we got to see this happen on Saturday. We had 25 to 30 people out as volunteers to help plant the 15 fruit trees, over 50 native pollinator plants, and 50 grasses in less than 3 hours. All those plants went into the ground. So, it was just a dirt lot with some contouring that we'd done and some rock work. And then, boom, all these plants went in. Everybody had fun. They had this feeling of ownership that this is a community orchard. They got to participate in planting it. They own it. They're going to get to come walk through it, enjoy it, sit, enjoy in the shade, grab an apple or a pear or an apricot, taste that deliciousness. And it's a fun thing.
And when will the project be completely done? It sounds like there's still mulching and stuff that needs to happen. When will that be completed?
Actually hoping to wrap that project up within the next week or so.
Okay, so you're almost there then.
Yeah, a lot has happened.
Well, congratulations.
A lot of hands and a lot of labor went into what's happened so far.
It'll be really wonderful, too, when you see it and you compare the difference of what it looked like before to what it's going to look like when it's complete. It's so heartwarming.
Yeah, and we should probably just clarify this. Fruit trees are not going to survive alone on just rainwater unless you store it in a tank and are able to supply it during the dry months. So we have also installed irrigation system that is going to provide the water need. However, the rainwater harvesting is going to cut that water need about in half.
Okay.
So we're planning to use that irrigation to water the fruit trees just when they need it in the dry months, April, May, June. The rest of the year, there's going to be so much abundant water resource there that those trees are going to tap into that they shouldn't need it. So this is a really beautiful example of how you can utilize rainwater harvesting in your own landscape, integrate walking paths and trees and plants and beauty and have fun doing it.
All right. Well, I hope that people can check out this great project located behind the Office of Sustainability and right next to the drive-in at Washington Federal, right by Goff Park. All right. We're going to shift gears now for this last segment of our show today. And both of you, Osher Gelbart and Mike Gallio, have your own companies. So you each wear multiple hats. Lots of hats. So Osher, your company is called Green Energy Now, and Mike, your company is called High Desert Native Plants, and you're based in El Paso. And I mentioned at the top of the show that what I appreciate about both of you is that you are practitioners of sustainable living, and you are helping to educate all of us on how to implement sustainable practices into our lives. So, Osher, tell us what you're doing with Green Energy Now.
All right. So, actually, I'd like to explain the origin of the name Green Energy Now. When I first moved to Silver City, some of you may remember I was talking about producing energy from algae that we would grow and then press the algae and get oil and burn that in a generator and create electricity for communities. And I was trying to get grants and to do this research and whatever, and it wasn't happening for me. And I decided, okay, let's do Green Energy Now. Let's do what we can do right now to have sustainable energy. And so I started working with solar hot water. We're in the Southwest. Everyone can have at least 80% of their water need met by solar hot water. So I started designing simple batch collector solar hot water systems. I also started working with gray water systems, composting toilets, solar ovens and solar dehydrators, all these kind of hand-built things that take advantage of passive solar and water resources on a property. And promoting those, at the same time, I also got an opportunity to distribute these reused water tanks that are 275 gallons and really quite useful for catching rainwater off your roof. And then I got really into what do you do when those tanks are full? What do you do with the overflow? So I got really into rainwater harvesting earthworks. And then I realized all this stuff I'm doing is what permaculture designers do. So I got my permaculture design certification, my rainwater harvesting certification. I now do site consultations, which I call integrated design site consultation, where I'm looking at all these factors on your property, the water flows, the people flows, the noise flows, energy flows, and trying to work with you, the homeowner, on how you want your interior and exterior landscapes to work together with all these things. And I come up with a bunch of estimates on projects, and then we go forward with installation. And so I can integrate rainwater harvesting, but also gray water, say from your laundry machine, put that into the rainwater harvesting basins. And I'm encouraging people to consider composting toilets, which actually take a huge water load off of your house and convert waste streams into nutrient streams that are amazing and with many stacking functions. So that's what Green Energy Now is basically all about. And the other component is that I'm trying to educate people what I've learned through my own experience, that it's possible to live very comfortably with a tenth the amount of energy that our standard American person on average is consuming.
So Asher, can you give us your website? Because what I like about your website is you give personal stories about like your chest freezer and sort of how does that compare with a conventional refrigerator freezer and how much less energy a chest freezer uses. And so you're kind of sharing with people the process that you've gone through to cut your energy use. And so I think your website is super valuable.
My website isn't entirely up to date, but it's got a lot of great information on it. And I can't even tell you the address because it's too long and convoluted. But if you Google Green Energy Now and my name, Asher, A-S-H-E-R.
It comes up.
Should be one.
That's exactly what I did.
Okay, good.
All right, it works.
Good.
So Mike Gallio and High Desert Native Plants, you're based in El Paso. Tell us what you do at your company.
Thank you, sure. Yeah, so High Desert Native Plants, I always go back into a little bit of history. I used to do environmental consulting for a big global engineering company, and my clients were developers, and I was a biologist doing site assessments on their land before they scraped it clean and built their gray infrastructure. And while I recognize all of that is very important and we need that, there's a big part of me that's more interested in conservation. And I thought, how can we find a happy medium between conservation and development and make this work? And with my interest in plants and seeing what the developers were doing, I understood that there's a market for native desert plants around the Southwest, and these guys are just scraping these plants down anyway. So what we started doing was going out in advance of their crews scraping them, we would go and collect and salvage these plants. And so with that, I started a nursery, High Desert Native Plants. Owning the equipment to go and do this salvage work gave me another opportunity to go out and do earthwork on things. And so I got teamed up with Van Clothier, and we build wetlands and do stream restoration work together. And so it's been a really exciting almost 9 years that I've been in business now, doing things that for the most part are all about conservation and building regenerative systems and wildlife habitat and places that are beautiful.
Wow, I know that's a really, really necessary function, is to do this salvage work. That sounds terrible, you know, salvage. But
yeah,
really
salvage
you're saving these species. I know this has been a big deal in Tucson with the saguaro cactus that we're just getting, scraped. And, you know, it takes decades to get these amazing cactus to get to that size. So what are some of the plants that you're saving?
So I work with quarry owners and home builders and those types of folks locally in El Paso. We get permission to go on the private land. We have done lots of safety training and that kind of stuff so that we can get out there and work safely on their properties without liability risk and that kind of stuff. And so we go for the plants that are readily available and that transplant well when salvaged. And those include the hardier desert plants, yuccas, for example, Yucca torii, Yucca faxoniana. Ocotillo plants do really well, and sometimes we get sites where the whole hillside is just covered in ocotillo, and then cactus, a variety of different cactus. The big cactus that is, you know, in high demand or what people really like to see is the fishhook barrel cactus, but those are actually becoming harder and harder to come by. Because a lot of their habitat has been bladed down. Another big important thing, I simply will not go to a site that is not scheduled for development. So there are a lot of folks that do this salvage work and stuff, and they go out to ranches and they have this big unlimited supply of a great variety of plants. And I won't do that because that is an ecological resource that would otherwise be left undisturbed. I'm going only after the places that are going to get scraped down anyway. More of a rescue than a salvage, let's say.
Right. Yes, a rescue. I like that. Yeah. You're saving
and
these.
I work with the El Paso Cactus and Rock Club, and there's some folks with the Tucson Cactus Clubs, and we trade plants back and forth and all that kind of fun stuff.
In less than a minute, closing comments before we close Earth Matters today. Osher?
Oh, it's been really fun to talk with you all out there on the radio waves today about these fun projects. Encourage you to get involved, look at the good examples that are out there. Give Stream Dynamics a call if you think your site is a good candidate. These projects are on the right-of-way free to you, the homeowner, and we're looking for more of them, and really grateful and thankful to you for listening.
Mike, closing comment quickly in the last 10 seconds.
Thank you for having us on the radio. I thank Stream Dynamics also for taking me along the ride on some of their exciting projects, and folks need to get out and see this stuff. It's really cool.
All right. Thanks so much, Osher Gelbart and Mike Galeo, for speaking with us here on Earth Matters today. That's all the time we have. Thank you to our audio engineer, Kyle Johnson. We hope you'll join us again for next week's edition of Earth Matters here on Gila Members Community Radio, 89.1 FM.